You're listening to Comfest Radio, brought to you by Comfest Global Community Film Festival. For more information and details about our festival, please go to comfest.com. I'm your host, Sandy De Freitas, and I'm here with filmmaker Esther Bucharest. Esther is the director and filmmaker of a movie called Powerful as God. Powerful as God critically examines the complexities of the child welfare system through the lens of 26 affected witnesses, including lawyers, politicians, doctors, social workers, foster parents, natural parents, an adoptive parent, a group home worker. Good afternoon, Esther.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good. Now, before we go into the actual details of the film, I'd like to find out what your reason was for making this film.
Well, I guess my reason was twofold. First of all, from personal experience as a foster parent, I became very disillusioned with the Children's Aid Society. I fostered with them for about a year. It took me about a year to be approved to be a foster parent, which I was okay with because I felt that they were looking out for the best interest of the child. And while I was a foster parent with them, I began to realize that there are some really wonderful people that work there that really care for the kids, and there are some very horrible people that work there that don't care about the children at all and are just there for their own benefit. They're very egotistical, and they make choices and decisions that very much injure people's lives, including the kids that they're supposed to be looking after. And these people are normally in upper management, is what I found. The social workers on the ground take a lot of orders from their supervisors and managers, and it's really the supervisors and managers in there that have a questionable motive for being there. So I became very disillusioned with the Children's Aid, and that was maybe about five, even longer, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. So I already had this background on the Children's Aid. I knew that they were a very corrupt organization, that they were hurting children. A lot of kids were getting hurt in the process. And the trigger for actually making or focusing on this topic was when I studied filmmaking in Cuba. And in speaking with my friends and colleagues in Cuba, I began to realize how terrified they are of the bureaucracy and how much fear they have. And that fear really reminded me of people who are associated with the Children's Aid Society, whether they are children or parents or foster parents or people that are being exploited emotionally, ones that actually care for the children who are being bullied by the organization. I began to see a lot of similarities between my colleagues in Cuba and them living under a dictatorship and us living in a democracy here in Canada and experiencing the same thing. So that was the trigger. I already knew about the organization, and I was triggered to go ahead and make this film when I saw that there was such a similarity between a dictatorship and a democracy. And I decided that we actually don't live in a democracy if we have a bureaucracy that bullies and silences us. That's not called a democracy. It's called a dysfunctional democracy. And that was the trigger for focusing on this topic.
And this bureaucracy that we know as a Children's Aid Society, how is it funded and who actually runs it?
Who actually runs it? Well, it's the person who oversees all of the Children's Aid Societies of Ontario is the Minister of Children and Youth, which we elect the minister. So we have an elected politician who is essentially given the authority to manage and supervise at a high level all of the Children's Aid Societies. And our taxes actually pay the Children's Aid Society to function. So the Children's Aid Societies get money based on a per child So every time they apprehend a child or they open a file for a child, they can get money for that. So their funding formula is based on a per-child basis, which is not a very good way to approach a social service like this.
Now, this society, Children's Aid Society, is it a government organization?
I believe that it is a government agency. Yes, it is a government agency. Each Children's Aid Society is registered as a nonprofit charity, but that doesn't excuse them from not being a government agency. Their laws, there is an actual law, the Child, Family, and Services Act, I think that's what it's called, actually oversees the Children's Aid Society. You don't have laws that oversee a mom-and-pop shop or a private organization or even a public organization. We have an actual law that oversees the Children's Aid Society. We have a minister that we elect that oversees the Children's Aid Society who can hire and fire executive directors, who can open and close Children's Aid Societies. Yes, it's a government agency, and yes, the government is responsible for it. And up to this point, all our government parties have done an absolutely horrible job of protecting our children, and the public really needs to step up and do something about that.
And is there any form of ombudsmanship over this society?
No, there. The place where there's a weakness in terms of ombudsmanship or somewhere to go is parents who have their children taken away. If you're a parent and you have your child taken away and you feel that you've been dealt with unjustly or unfairly, you have nowhere to go. You have nowhere to complain to. You really, there's nowhere for you to go. All of the checks and balances that the Children's Aid Society has in place right now, not one of them address the parent. So what's happening is parents, any person living in Ontario who is a parent, they are vulnerable to the Children's Aid Society, because if they are exploited or they are treated unjustly or they have their children taken away from them and in a way that's not fair, they have nowhere to go. They really can't do anything about it. And that's a huge problem.
And what are some of the so-called atrocities that has been inflicted upon some of the victims in this film?
Some of the atrocities that have been inflicted on the victims. I have to sort of review some of the victims in my mind. I think what the Children's Aid Society is really good at doing is making a mountain out of a molehill. They want to make sure that there is something wrong, and there will always be something wrong when they get involved in your life. Now, whatever it is that's wrong, it could be a very, very small issue. And what they're very, very adept at is turning this really tiny issue into a massive problem that costs tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. And they just make something really tiny into a colossal matter. For example, there's in the film, there's a Native grandmother, elder Lena. She was caring for her four grandchildren, and they took her grandchildren away from her because they said that she had hit a teacher at the school. Well, she had tapped a teacher on the shoulder to ask the teacher a question, but because they were already on her case and they were looking for a reason to take the kids away, they accused her of hitting the teacher. She got arrested or charged with assaulting a teacher, and for this reason they took her kids away. So did she touch the teacher? Yeah, maybe she touched the teacher to ask her a question or whatever. Did she assault the teacher? I don't think so. And that's what they like to do. They like to turn something really small into something huge.
And why do you think they would want to do that?
Oh, there's a lot of reasons. this is the big question. Are they incompetent? Are they egotistical? Do they have something to gain? I think that the four children that Lena had, they were already in care because she was acting as a foster parent. She took the children as a foster parent, and that's a separate issue. When a grandmother takes four of her grandchildren, unless she becomes a foster parent, she's not going to get any financial help from the government to care for these kids. And that's an issue we need to address, because a grandmother should be able to care for her grandchildren and get financial support from the government to do that without going through the rigmarole of becoming a foster parent. So anyway, Lena had to become a foster parent in order to get some financial assistance for her four kids. So the kids were already in the system. The CIS was already getting money for these four kids. But when they took them from Lena, they split them up, if I recall. One went into a group home, and group homes are very profitable for the CIS. So you can sort of scrutinize the issue and say, did they want to take these kids away from Lena because they wanted to make more money off the kids? Or were they just sick and tired of Lena? Was she getting up their nose? She was too high maintenance for them? Could that have been it? You know, Lena really tried to get help for her children, her grandchildren. They really needed different types of services. They needed counseling and support from trauma that they had endured from before Lena took them in. And I think she mentions in the film that she tried really hard to get the kids help. And a lot of times when a foster parent tries to get the kids help, or a parent tries to get the kids help, it's just too draining on the society. They prefer something that's much lower maintenance. And so they try and find reasons to shift the situation to something that isn't so demanding.
I think we have, excuse me, a clip of some of the people from your film speaking now. Let's just listen to that for a minute.
The reason why I would like to remain anonymous is because I found that the more I've spoken out about the Children's Aid Society, the more they've gone and made a very concerted effort to make my life more difficult and create problems between myself and my children. So if it means silencing somehow by using a child as a pawn.
Well, if they've already lost their kid, they really have nothing further to lose. They should be speaking out. It's the people who have their kids that should be very careful.
I know I'm not alone in everything that's happened to me. I want people to know that CIS actually destroyed my family. I didn't help my family at all. They tore it completely apart, and it's not going to ever be back together again. And I blame them.
I cannot tell you the anger, the rage that I have, because I know that other children are in foster care. They're getting abused. Some of them die.
It's terrible. I don't know what our words say. We call them J-O-ish. That means the devil work.
Every opportunity I have to tell people this story, especially in the Jewish community, because people don't know that this is going on. People find it so hard to believe that a Children's Aid Society could act maliciously. It just goes outside of what people believe, but it's true.
There you have about four of the people you interviewed who were affected a great deal, who were very hurt and upset about the Children's Aid Society. How did you find these people?
Well, I started off by speaking to a person who runs a website on the internet, like an advocacy group for victims who have been hurt by the Children's Aid Society. And I just mentioned to him what I was thinking of doing. I asked him if he felt that there was anybody out there that may want to talk about their experiences, that may want to have their voice heard, because there really wasn't anywhere else for them to go with it. And before I knew it, through word of mouth, I had phone calls and emails, and I was actually inundated with victims who really, really needed to speak out and tell their story because they really had nowhere else to go with it, which is really sad in our society to have that.
And have you been in touch with them since this film?
The witnesses from
right.
the film?
Mm-hmm.
On and off, yeah.
And how did they, have they seen the film?
Oh, yes.
And how do they feel about this?
Oh, yes. Well, the whole film was done, all 26 of the witnesses, everything was filmed with an open consent form. So that means that if somebody felt that they were misrepresented in the work, after seeing the work, they could be pulled out. They could choose to not be included in the work. So I was holding my breath when they mm-hmm. saw the film for the first time, because any person that pulled out would mean that that film would never be released, really, because to re-edit it without one of the 26 in there would have been very difficult. Nobody pulled out. So to answer your question, how did they feel about it? Nobody pulled out. So I guess they felt okay about it.
They can breathe a sigh of relief. Now, did you get the other side of the story? Did you, as a filmmaker, did you try to get the bureaucrats to have their say in the film?
I actually tried very hard. The Children's Aid Society just stonewalled me. They wanted nothing to do with me. I tried approaching the Children's Aid Society from all types of angles. One of the ways I also tried to get a perspective from the Children's Aid Society is by going to the other agencies that actually feed into the Children's Aid Society, being the Office of the Children's Lawyer, the Child Advocate, and the College of Social Workers. Those three agencies have much to do with the Children's Aid, and they work very tightly with the Children's Aid. Well, not the College of Social Workers, which is unfortunate. Because the college is actually responsible for enforcing the fact that social workers who practice in Ontario are registered. And the college has utterly failed and completely ignored the fact that the Children's Aid Society employs unregistered social workers. They've just turned their back to that issue, which is very irresponsible of the college. But those are the checks and balances that the government put in place when they put this funding formula in place. You see, they thought, okay, we'll give you money per child, and in order just to make sure that you behave and this process is carried out in the utmost of integrity, we are saying that it is now the law that social workers be registered and abide by a code of ethics. And the child advocate has access to all the children in care and can go and look at any private files and talk to any of the children. So it's not a totally closed off institution. We're giving the public ways to get in and make sure that things are running smoothly. Well, it turns out the college is not enforcing the law, so the social workers are not registered. And the advocate for children and youth, these bureaucrats, they all spoke to me on the phone prior to the interview, and then they all bailed. They all said that they were going to be interviewed, and they were okay with the interview. And just before the interview came on or came up, they backed out of it, all of them. The child advocate, I was very surprised that he backed out of it because he was so confident in giving me the interview. But some of the issues that came up in speaking with him on the phone was, how do you reach these kids in group homes? How do the kids, okay, so you're an abused child in a group home. How do you know to call the child advocate? Like, you can't call mom and dad. You're being abused by maybe an employee at the group home or another child. Where do you go for help? Well, the child advocate says, well, you come to me. You come to the child advocate. And my response was, okay, so I'm 8 or 9 years old or 10 years old. How do I even know you exist? How do I know your phone number? How do I know how to get to you? And the answer is, you don't. You don't know I exist. This is a problem we're addressing. This is a problem we have with this whole issue. And it's like, of course it's a problem. So what good are you? Right? So, this was one of the things that I spoke to him on the phone about, and I was hoping that between the time that we had our phone call and the time that I had the interview with him, he'd sort of sort out a response, because I would be asking the same question on camera. well, he just bailed on the interview. And I just think that's real chicken of him.
So who's looking out for the child? If the child can't go...
Nobody's looking out for the child, and that's the tragedy. I think that, to me, is the saddest and most tragic part of all, is that nobody's looking out for the child. Nobody's got that kid back. And that makes me very sad.
Yeah. And then some of these children, they're labeled as having behavioral problems. Is that correct?
Well, a lot of them are labeled as having behavioral problems. Some of them are on drugs that shouldn't be.
And these are prescribed drugs?
These are prescribed drugs, and that's because that's a whole separate conversation. There's a business in the prescribed drug angle. Psychologists love to, but there are psychologists that are working with the Children's Aid Society who are not totally on the level. There's a profit to be made by drugging kids, and I interviewed a former psychologist of the Children's Aid Society who worked for them for, 30 or 40 years, something like that. I think that's enough time for somebody to work in an organization to come out and be able to speak out against it and say, this is what's going on, this is what I've seen with my own two eyes, and that's what the psychologist in the film said, that the drugs are happening and the kids are being drugged unnecessarily. So, yes, the kids have behavioral problems. How these behavioral problems are dealt with. Sometimes kids have behavioral problems because they miss their mom and dad. And they say, I'm going to misbehave until you send me home, because that's how a kid thinks. Right? So what are you going to do with that kid? Drug them into a stupor so that they stop misbehaving to see mom and dad? Yeah, actually, that's what you are going to do, because that's really simple. It doesn't cost you a dime. You can diagnose the child as having some kind of disability, so the government's going to triple your fee. The group home doesn't really have to pay too much attention to the kid, so they hire these young kids without any skills, because it really doesn't require any skills to look after kids who are drugged into a stupor. I mean, it's actually horrible. It's horrible what's happening. It needs to stop. The public needs to stop it.
And who is the most vulnerable in terms of different cultures in this whole debate? Who are the most vulnerable?
You mean who is the most culturally vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that First Nations have had have really been hurt by this initiative, and that's because their ways of living don't conform with the middle-class standard that the Children's Aid Society seems to think that every home should. So in terms of culture, I think First Nations have really suffered. I had a woman who wrote in to the site, because the website itself is a documentary. It has 22 stories in the Voices Archive section of people who wrote in to the documentary after the film launched.
What's the website?
And, blackout.ca.
And how do you spell that?
BLAKOUT. So there's no C. .ca.
Okay.
And she felt that she was picked on because she's black. And that story is called Because I'm Black. And it's horrible. I mean, she talks about being dragged out of her front door by the hair, and how they took her girl away and drugged up her girl. And she feels that she was discriminated against because she was black. And I don't know.
Is she part of the story?
She's not in the film, but she's on the site. She did write in her story into the website, so it is on the website. Culturally, I don't know if they're picking on any particular culture. I've heard from people who speak Spanish, white people.
So
I would say everybody's at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, everybody's at risk. The funding formula is out of control, and there's no checks and balances for that funding formula. And I know a lot of executive directors of Children's Aid Societies find that accusation repulsive, but I would say in return, where are your registered social workers? If that accusation is repulsive, then why haven't you walked the ethical line here?
Right.
Right?
So what were the challenges in making this film?
challenges in making the film. There were all kinds of challenges, but I would probably say the greatest challenge was I think it was emotional. It was the stories were so sad.
You kind of took on their pain.
Yes.
As a filmmaker would.
Yes, I took on their pain.
Right.
And that was a huge burden.
Very draining.
And I felt like I had a huge responsibility to them to tell their story in the way that they really intended it to be told.
And after making the film, where were you able to screen it? And were there any obstacles in your way?
Well,
I'm trying to get
Confest screened the film, which is fantastic. And it was also screened at Hamilton Film Festival just after Confest.
So, and before Confest, what were your problems again, the film to the screen?
Nobody else picked it up. The subject was just too controversial, too controversial. So it was great that Confest picked it up and took the risk of doing that.
And so now it's going on to different screenings. And
Yeah.
So where could someone see this film right now?
Right now it's online. It's on the website. It's on blackout.ca, and it's under the menu item, View the Doc. So anyone who wants to see it can see it.
So now, how long ago have you made this film?
I finished the film in 2011.
Right. So this is 2013.
Yes.
Have you recovered?
Yes, I have recovered, but January of 2013 is when I stopped taking stories on the website, because the whole documentary was had ethics oversight by the Ryerson Ethics Review Board, and that ethics certificate expired in January 2013. So I actually gave another, basically 2 years for people to contribute, including the Children's Aid Society if they wanted to.
You gave them an opportunity to see the film.
Yeah.
And they said...
Well, I didn't hear from anybody during that time, right? I mean...
Try again.
Children's Aid Society, that's where they complained to Ryerson, saying that I didn't ask them to contribute. But
it seems to be picking up some momentum about this subject matter. Tell me a bit about that, just before we go.
The momentum about the subject matter.
I think there was some kind of demonstration down at... Was it Queen's Park?
Well, there's a lot of different demonstrations. There's a huge advocacy group. One has 6,000 members, another has 3,000 members. I mean, thousands of people in Ontario are affected. And if you're not even part of an advocacy group, I'll bet you that if you're a parent, you're afraid of the Children's Aid Society. Every parent in Ontario is afraid of the Children's Aid Society. And that's a problem. You have to do something about that.
They can just come in and take your child at any time without reason.
Yes, you have to take their power away. The Children's Aid Society has to have their power taken away.
And that's the people.
The public can only do that.
Well, great. Esther, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Come on the show again. This is Confess Radio, brought to you by Confess Global Community Film Festival. For more details about how to submit a film or to attend our annual film festival that takes place in the St. Lawrence Market neighborhood, then you can go to confess.com, that's C-O-M-M, like Mary, F-F, like Frank, E-S-T.com. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to speaking to you again.